The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. The Chief Minister is on through till 1 today. Alfred Cannon MHK for Aaron Michael will be here. So as we head towards 2026, general election year next year, many challenges handled so far, many challenges ahead. Not least Manx Care's budget issues, the issue of offshore and onshore wind, and the all-important battle to secure business and inward investment to maintain everybody's way of life. And if that weren't enough, there's the Moneyval inspection next year as well. Faster Mike, good afternoon, Chief Minister.
Faster Mike, good afternoon, Andy.
Well, here we are at Christmas time. There are many things on your desk. The inbox must be absolutely huge. But one question in from Alan, who just said, is it possible that we will see the end of Manx Care in the next administration, i.e. what's happening with the situation between DHSC, Manx Care, their budget and what have you?
Well, that's a great question to start with. But can I just give you a quick overview? Because there's a lot of negativity around at the moment. There's a lot of political discourse, a lot of things that are challenging us. But, you know, Andy, sometimes you do have to stand back and take a look at the island from the external perspective. I spent last week at the British Irish Council with the leaders of the devolved nations, yeah. Scotland, Wales, the UK Prime Minister was there, the Secretary of State for Wales, Northern Irish political leaders, the Taoiseach and Taoiseach from Ireland. You know, everybody has significant problems that they are dealing with, and in many cases those problems are far greater than some of the issues that we are dealing with. Yeah. And when you take a look at the Isle of Man at the moment, you know, I would suggest the assessment from outside is a strong, stable and safe and secure island and economy. You know, when our unemployment figures are remaining incredibly low, our bank deposits, in terms of an indicator of the strength of our financial services sector, yeah, are higher than they've been for some considerable years. We started off this administration, they were sort of in their mid-30s. They're well above £40 billion worth in bank deposits, indicating how much confidence investors have in the island. We've got positive inward migration figures in terms of the people that are coming here. And when I speak to the professionals in the finance sector in particular, they are telling me time and time again that investors want to come to the island. They're looking to relocate here and they want to come and bring their businesses here. So I think sometimes you've got to put all this into context. That's the island on the outside. Of course, when you pull back the lid and get into the the nitty-gritty of day-to-day life, there are a number of issues, of course, that we are dealing with. But let's put a lot of what the discourse is at the moment into a sense of perspective. Okay. And of course, it's the independent assessor, economics assessor, and I know it gets some criticism. Moody's continues to say the island is strong.
I was going to say
and stable.
That didn't make much of a headline, did it? But the fact that the Moody's rating is terribly important, isn't it?
Of course, Andy. In the day-to-day lives of people where we've had all this inflation, where the cost of living is so high, where it's actually, you know, although there is business out there, of course, and I was speaking to a contractor this morning in the construction industry who's telling me, you know, his order book is good. It's looking okay into next year as well. But where they are now compared to where they were 10 years ago, it's harder to make money because, of course, prices, costs and everything else are much higher. And that profitability, if you like, is the piece that is really being squeezed quite considerably. And that's one of the big problems at the moment, is somehow getting this release in the economy so that there is more flow of cash. And of course, you know, I know that we are seeing that frustration with the businesses in that sort of domestic economy piece. But, you know, I think we need to take the context of the broader position, right, you know, as well as dealing with the minutiae. Now, let me very quickly answer that, Makes Care. Will Makes Care be around in the future? I think the outcome from that recent assessment, if you like, of the position of our healthcare service, from all the contributors said, look, we shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater, but we do need to make some improvements in the way that Manx Care is overseen and its interaction both with the political side, but also in terms of its performance as well.
And again, this may be an intractable problem, because I remember years and years ago, there was always tension between when the department was running the operational side, and the department was always coming back for more money. It was never on target. So, and nowadays, it seems as though that's been transferred onto Manx Care's shoulders, and they get the heat because they're either over, their costs are going over, or they're over budget or what have you. So again, people, and we all know the situation, in that people are living longer. The care system is going to be overburdened. Medications go up in price, and there are always new drugs that are coming on the market. But do you see a way of unraveling this knot for the future? Do you see it as solvable?
Well, I think it is the big challenge of certainly one of the big challenges of the day, is solving this problem. I mean, one of the reasons why Manx Care was created was because of the constant overspend that was coming through, albeit it was in much more greater proportion, I think, to the amount of money that we were spending on healthcare sort of 5-10 years ago, but also because of, you know, the concerns about the operational standards and effectiveness of the organisation just run under the DHSC banner. We've moved forward, you know, we've professionalised that in many ways, but healthcare spending has exploded. There's no question about that over the last 5 years. We're now investing double the money we were, almost double the money come the next budget than we were at the start of this administration. We've also invested heavily to clear a lot of that backlog post COVID. £20 million or so went into delivering 4,000 operations in double quick time. You know, we've invested now in terms of trying to make progress with the dental waiting lists, and you know, we will see clear evidence of that progress over the next 12 months. We're looking at the community health side and improvements there. But, you know, there is clearly a need for us to improve delivery and also get on top of the spending. Because if the spending continues at the current rate, you know, there will something will have to give, and either you've got to accept that the service operates in the way that it does and everybody wants it to continue like that, but the cost clearly is going to impact on government's budget, and therefore there's going to be challenges around where that money's coming from. Or you look at how the service is you know, governed. Can you find efficiencies there? And also then you're perhaps a question I know for this summer and you know, into the next 12 months will be about, are there other ways of finding the funding for continued healthcare, given the advances in medicine, given you know, the longevity we're seeing in people now, which is great news, but also given that sort of changing imbalance in our demographics.
Is this Mrs. Cope's job? Is it Claire Christian's job? Or is it your job to solve this?
It's everybody's job. Andy. I don't think you can just point this at one person. You know, absolutely, we need to have confidence in the structure that is put up. You know, the professionals who are charged with delivery, the professionals who are charged with understanding what healthcare is needed for the population now into the future. And I think also, you know, perhaps our job is to challenge that more. Our job is to clearly support it, make sure that people are getting the healthcare that they need. But also, you know, we need to make some assessment of what is also happening in society as well. And we need to find preemptive policies, I hope, that will mean better health. People live healthier lives and therefore less strain is put on the system.
Okay, WhatsApp at 223. This is this is Pat, who says, much is being said about the rise of the minimum wage. It's a stealth tax that will hurt employers. Obviously, and this is finger pointing going on here, the value in MHK's pay has gone up since 2021. Also, are you aware that the civil service unions are about to ask for a high pay rise to maintain the differential in the pay grades within the civil service due to the minimum rate that many of the government employees will now get?
So let me just deal with a couple of the points made there. As I understand it, pay negotiations in terms of the civil service, the PSPA, is currently in arbitration. That decision, in other words, an independent adjudicator is making that decision, and I'm sure we'll hear the results for this year in that respect. I wasn't aware of sort of significant angst around grades and specific bids coming in. My understanding was that it was the arbitrator was just looking at awarding the settlement in accordance with inflation, but let's see what happens. The minimum wage obviously is it's an issue, it's a contentious issue. Government, in Tynwald, the last Tynwald it was in fact, that had this vote from a poverty committee about increasing standards of living by aligning the minimum wage with this living wage, and there's been a lot of angst about that. We've obviously now reached a point where a formal calculation has been put alongside the rate of the minimum wage rate, which is 66% of median wages. But irrespective of all that, there has been significant pressure put on business and the domestic economy. I mean, effectively, Andy, there's no question on getting away from the fact that, you know, if this rise goes through in its entirety, it's 60% businesses in terms of that minimum wage right now. Great, listen, in terms of the low paid, but, you know, we have to think about the economy. It's not going to be good for us if we're ending up with people unemployed and on job seekers and unable to get work. And so, you know, the other impact, of course, is cost increases. Now, inflation, we have got inflation under control on this island. It's actually lower. I'd say it's much lower. It's not much lower at all, but it's slightly lower than that's going on across the water. I think just 2.8% or so. I'd like to see that come down, a fraction more. But we are going to have to take action on this. I am discussing matters with the Treasury Minister and the Enterprise Minister. There will clearly be a focus on this budget, because something has to give when this type of policy is in play, and rightly so, in terms of looking after the low paid. And I think everybody, including the businesses, want to achieve that. But we've also got to run an economy, and there is a lot of pressure on small businesses at the moment. And, you know, frankly, government has got a responsibility now to try and find some solutions, and we're working on those, and we will see where we get to in January, and we will obviously be looking very closely at this budget, because that's got to deliver, and I'm sure it will deliver some relief to people on the ground.
Okay, well, let's get to the phones now, and Stephen's first with us today. Hello, Stephen, you're live with Alfred Cannon, MHK Chief Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy, and good afternoon, Chief Minister, and most importantly, good afternoon, listeners.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Cannon, if I could just wind your memory back to the discussion about my card, and the government again was in danger of losing the vote of Joni Farragher's motion, which was to extend the MyCard and provide another service for any user. And I think that your motion, inexplicably, people didn't read it properly, because really all it did was give people, was reinforce the premise that to go to a bank account. Now, you know, you're the member for Kirkmichael and the West, and you will know that there is no banking facilities in the entirety of the West Coast, right round from Castletown, right up past Peel, and into Ramsey, where I believe there's talk of reducing the banking hours there, and I believe in the West, where the post office would accept Lloyds Bank deposits, is going to be stopped. So my question is, were the people hoodwinked in the Keys by your amendment, which didn't deliver what most people thought and wanted? And what do you intend as a government to provide access to cash? Because the post office at least did that. Now, you know that in the UK, there is access to cash regulations, and also the people can ask for a review if there's no facilities in the area, and it's up to the banks to get together and provide a banking hub. Now, are we frightened as a government? Are you frightened as a government to introduce regulations which would make banks have banking hubs?
Chief Minister?
Right, so Stephen, I mean, I think we can all acknowledge that when Treasury embarked on this course, and they've signalled this for a number of years, I think it was probably about 12 months ago or just slightly under, that they really actively reached out to everybody and said that they were going to move to direct payments into bank accounts for a number of reasons, not least because more and more people were switching to that methodology anyway, and it was getting more and more expensive in terms of the figures that were being provided for the cost of delivering through MyCard. But I think where the breakdown has happened in terms of the clarity that has been provided of the alternative provision, which was promised post MyCard, the position that we're in, and quite rightly Tin Ward expressed a number of concerns, which led me to effectively provide some reassurances and some councillor ministers' direction around that, is that Treasury, we're always going to continue to try and move people to a direct banking facility, which from a cost perspective and efficiency perspective is clearly a lot easier. But accepting that people need and want in many circumstances access to cash. So the provision at the moment is that after the 1st of January, if people haven't registered for a bank account by the 31st of December and do not want to do that, they will then get a check, I understand, will be sent out, which they will be able to cash. And those who need to continue on what Treasury is determining a payment exception service will be given MyCard facilities. And I understand that Treasury are continuing to work at the alternative method of payment that has been promised. But that is the current position. I think my motion amendment at the time in Tinwald was designed to provide absolute reassurance. We got reassurance from Treasury that effectively people would still be able to access the cash if they needed to and wanted to. But, you know, like accepting there is still some way to go to understand how that is going to continue into the future.
Okay, Stephen?
Well, you haven't really answered the question, to be honest with you, Chief Minister. There's still problems for people in getting access to cash. That is probably one of the reasons why people prefer the MyCard. If you're elderly or got disabilities, there's not that far to travel to get your money from a post office. But furthermore, you haven't really addressed the issue of no bank branches. And as I say in my opening remarks to you, that is a big issue. There is simply no branches and no bank branches. You and your government and the Treasury are saying, we want you to deposit your money in a bank. But if you're in Peel, there's no bank branches. No. You haven't addressed that issue, and I don't think you're going to, because you don't want to upset the banks.
No, I think it's difficult for us to instruct banks to provide branches in communities where they are arguing that they're just not getting the business. I mean, look, many people in society have transitioned to digital banking. I presumably the same as many other people get cash out normally when visiting functions or going to charity events. But that is normally the reason for me carrying cash. I accept that a number of people still want to use cash in their community. The point about, although it's going back almost in time, but I understand the point about the Treasury issuing the checks is that you still will be able to go to your post office or to your local store and be able to cash those checks and get cash out. It is not a case of issuing the check, I understand, for you to be able to go and the purpose of that to put it straight into your bank, because otherwise you may as well just sign up directly for the bank transfer facilities.
Okay. Final word, Stephen.
Asking about the wider issue.
What would you like to happen, Stephen, briefly, if you would?
Well, I think I would like to see, in the UK you've got the Financial Conduct Authority, where these regulations sit under, and they do provide a certain set of guidelines for banks where they do have to provide access to cash for deposit. It's not just simply going and withdrawing cash, it's deposits, it's withdrawals, it's other banking business that they do within it. And also under the linked regulations, you can ask for a review of your area. So I think what you've said, Chief Minister, I don't agree with. I hope you will reflect on it, and I do hope you will reconsider the wider issue of access to cash in communities, because on the West Coast, there is no facilities, the wider facilities of access to cash, not just the issue of my card. So
okay.
Please reflect.
Andy, very quickly, Stephen, absolutely, I do take your point, and I acknowledge the fact that it is frustrating that you cannot find some way to get a cash machine across that piece of the island, or across the area that you've described. We did write an access to cash report. It is with the Department for Enterprise. I can assure you that it remains a concern for all of us to make sure that we've got the correct access to cash. I take your points, and I will be pursuing that further with the Department for Enterprise.
Okay, all right, Stephen, thank you.
Calling all Manx farmers. Manx Rock Limited now offer an all-in-one line spreading service. Manx Rock supply, deliver and spread your line. So make life easy. Get in touch today. For rates and to book your line spreading slot, call Manx Rock now on 828845. That's 828845. Or visit Manx Rock Limited on Facebook and see what we can do for you.
Darker days and damper conditions require more action. Make sure you carry out your vehicle safety checks this winter. Think powders. P, petrol and diesel. O, oil. W, water. D, damage. E, electrics. R, rubber. S, self.
Make sure your lights are all working too. Brought to you by Quayside Tyres in conjunction with Isle of Man Road Safety.
The nights are getting darker, and you know what that means. It's nearly Christmas. At Millichaps, you'll find all you need to add that sparkle this festive season. Decorate your home with quirky ornaments, fabulous rugs and lamps, and beautiful pictures. Millichaps also have a great range of unusual gifts, so don't delay. Call Santa, is that you?
Shh! Ooh, there's some great finds here at Millichaps.
Yes, there are. Take time to browse Millichaps of Ramsey, a town full of special little shops. Renewable
energy. Manx Solar Electrical offer wise solar and heating solutions for home and business. We're the Isle of Man's trusted experts in solar panels, Tesla battery storage and energy efficient heat pumps, helping you power your home sustainably and save money. Call 665800 or visit manxsolarelectrical.com.
Come to Manx Solar Electrical.
Our island's energy reimagined.
When you want the best.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And the Chief Minister is on. Alfred Cannon MHK with us until 1 today. It's 1:30. Eric's on now. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Chief Minister.
Hi, Eric.
Can I ask you why you didn't appoint a disabled champion, which was in the previous house there was one? And do you think it's reasonable for my fight to get on a bus with a mobility scooter is now going into its seventh year, and that includes seven ministers, including yourself as a minister? And what exactly has happened with the Equality Act on the Isle of Man? Do you not, just not take any notice of it?
So, Eric, the Equality Act is well entrenched now, certainly across the public sector, and where there are inequalities or flaws in that, then they need to be addressed as much as possible. Now, if I remember correctly, Eric, you have a mobility scooter, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Were you not? There was a try. It was the buses predominantly where you've had your big issue, I think,
yeah.
And particularly
totally.
Yeah,
totally the buses, and the trial was only around the route in Douglas, and I went and had my buggy measured. I got onto that bus to do that trial. For some reason, it's on for 6 months, and only in Douglas. And now I've been told, if you remember, the minister was on the Man in Line, I think it was 2 months ago, and I was told 2 to 3 weeks, then I was told 2 to 3 weeks, then I was told 2 to 3 weeks. Now I've been told that they're not going to do it because the bus drivers have had a vote to go on strike. And so that's a reason now to stop all the work on this. And apparently it's going to be next year now before we can get on a bus. You can get on a bus anywhere in Europe, in England, in Europe. What is different about the Isle of Man?
This was the trial on, was it Route 21, wasn't it, Eric?
Yes, it was.
Right. And, okay, so long and short of it, you participated in that trial. That trial has come to an end, and now you are waiting to hear, or you've heard nothing from the department since that trial was undertaken.
I've heard the promises of your minister saying, yes, 2 to 3 weeks. It was live on the Man in Line. And then when two of the members of the EOI were on, they said they didn't know anything about it, and now just being messed about again. You know, 7 years. And what's changed in 7 years? Absolutely nothing.
Right. Well, Eric, what I will do is I will find out when I finish this programme where that trial is up to in terms of the post-assessment that has taken place, and whether and how Bus Vannon are going to deal with your particular specific issue. I mean, I need to be clear with the listeners. I mean, my understanding is that, you know, with wheelchairs and other disabled equipment, you can get on, and there are accessibility platforms and things to get people onto buses. But it is your mobility scooter that is being perennially the issue because of the sort of nature of it.
And also, I mean, reading between the lines, I don't know, paraphrase, but I think I'm right in saying that what Eric and disabled people in general want to know is, who's holding this up? Is it elected members? Is it the unions? Is it the civil servants? If it can happen elsewhere. Am I right, Eric?
Yes, it is, absolutely. You know, and to be making excuses up all the time, you know, and not getting on with the job, you know, I mean, what are you supposed to do? 7 years, you know, that's longer than this house has been sitting. You discussed it in Tynwald 5 years ago. and it was said that they would be onto the bus company to make it happen.
Okay.
But we're still here 7 years later.
Right. Well, I'm sure things are happening post that trial. At least I hope they are. And I will speak to the minister and the department following this, and we will see and update you as to what proposals are being brought forward.
Okay. Eric, all right. Well, the chief minister's on to it now, Eric. So we'll see what happens where that's concerned. But Eric, we understand. We take your point. And I was just going to say, Eric, you said you were good. You're not going to protest at the House of Keys, are you, Eric?
I certainly am.
Dear me. Please don't get into trouble. Please don't get into trouble. John's with us now. Thank you, Eric. Here's John with us now. Hi, John. You're live with the Chief Minister.
Hi, Andy. I'd just like to ask the Chief Minister one simple question. Liverpool Sea Terminal. If he had known, and the rest of the government had known, what the overall cost of this was going to be at the start, would they have gone ahead with it? And not only the overall cost, but it turns out now an ongoing cost.
Well, that, I think there are always going to be ongoing costs, John, but that's that's a really good question. You know, I think because this all started actually back when I was Treasury Minister at the time, you know, there were multiple occasions when these costs started to escalate where we sat and asked ourselves, you know, what is the position? You know, do we continue or do we move on? It's a really difficult question to answer now, but, you know, the bottom line is we have built the terminal. It is there. It is going to be there for 200 years, and we need to make the very best of it that we can.
Do we know how much it's cost?
The specific figures are not there yet, Andy. I mean, I think the last official figure that was given was circa £75 million. And as you know, there are a number of legal discussions that are going on at the moment around the final cost and who should pay what in terms of the final bill.
John?
There must be a lot of very happy people in Liverpool laughing their way all the way to the bank.
I think, to be honest, John, I mean, you know, having sort of sat through at least, well, quite intensively a major part of that project from an external perspective in terms of trying to understand where we were financially with it, I don't think that necessarily is fair. It did turn out to be incredibly complex because for whatever reason, and this is clearly where some of the questions about who pays what remain, you know, when you went beneath that surface, it became incredibly complex because of the infrastructure that was underneath the tarmac when we started effectively digging. And you know, I think that the construction consultants, the constructors, and everybody concerned really became incredibly frustrated with the delays, the problems that they were facing, and it became incredibly challenging. So, look, there's no question about it. It has been a long path to get to the position that we're in. We are in that position. I think the terminal itself is excellent in terms of its positioning, and it really should be an asset to the island for many, many, many years to come. And as I say, you know, we have got that now for a considerable period of time. We have permanency, we have security there, and I think on that basis, you know, there are a number of ticks we can put in the box, accepting, of course, the cost of this overall has been something that is regrettable.
Okay. John, thanks for calling today.
Okay.
Bye. Appreciate that as well. Thanks for that. When do you think, just a final word on the Liverpool landing stage, which is like a running sore, really, when will the line be drawn under who pays what to whom?
I think that's in the hands of those professional negotiators and the lawyers.
I think
Andy,
we all understand that there are things going on behind the scenes and who did what and to whom and this, that, and the other, and who's responsible for this, that, and the other. But just briefly, because you were in Treasury, and you know there must have been steam coming out the windows when it went from 35 million a lot higher. Was there any other alternative to Prince's Half-Tide Dock? Was there any alternative?
Well, I think that was laid out in the initial reports that actually go back to the previous administration, even before Howard Quayle, you know, Tyler Bell's time, when it was all, you know, set out. And that effectively, that alternative at the time appeared to be either just can Liverpool altogether and use an alternative port like Heysham. Overwhelmingly, the public told the government and told us that they wanted to carry on using Liverpool. And the next available option was Birkenhead. And basically, passengers would get off at Birkenhead and be ferried across, driven across to the town centre. But that, you know, in itself would have been quite a journey and potentially would have added quite an number of minutes stroke hours possibly to any journey. So, you know, the decision was made that we wanted to land almost effectively in the centre of Liverpool so that people could have easy access to trains and onward destinations rather than going across to Birkenhead. But that would have been the other option for that Liverpool.
And of course it wasn't our choice region, because Liverpool wanted to look after their economy, their visitor economy, by putting the cruise terminal there so all the big cruise liners could go where we used to be. So we didn't have an option to stay there, did we?
No, that was, we were going to be shifted off that particular berth.
Okay. Right, live with the Chief Minister through till one today on Man in Line.
From the 1st of January 2026, organ donation will change to an opt-out system in the Isle of Man for adults aged 18 and over. Organ donation remains your choice, and it's still important that you confirm your decision on the NHS Organ Donor Register. You can register or update your decision at any time. Visit organdonation.nhs.uk, call the helpline on 0300 123 2323, or make your decision via the NHS app. And remember, it's important to share your decision with friends and family.
Take a stroll along the prom and call into the new look Cafe Villa and sample the new menu. There's something for everyone at Cafe Villa, from hearty breakfasts and pancakes to baked potatoes, a great choice of delicious mains and award-winning ice cream. All made using local produce where possible and supporting local producers. With seating inside and out and a stunning sea view, it's the perfect spot to relax. New look, new menu. That's Cafe Villa on Douglas Prom. Open 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. every day.
Mrs. Claus here. As Santa's busy, I'm going to decorate the grotto ready for Christmas. And I hear that Ramsey Garden Centre is full of festive goodies, decorations, lights, gifts, even Christmas trees. Ramsey Garden Centre opens 7 days a week on Albert Road.
Feeling the winter lull? Get your glow back at Tracy Bell. With winter offers on now. For her, for him, for couples or family and friends. Just visit our website and click on our winter offers button on the front page and take advantage today. Tracy Bell, helping you to be better.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
At Ellen Van Inn Home, we provide compassionate residential and respite care for older adults in the heart of Douglas. Our diverse team creates a warm, inclusive community, providing personal care, meals and enriching activities. We're more than a care home, we're a place to belong. Visit ellenvaninhome.org.im or call 675 820 today.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
Still searching for only their second home win of the season so far, FC Isle of Man are back in action on Ireland this weekend with a potentially poignant game on the cards. The Manx side welcome AFC Liverpool to the Bowl this weekend, with both sides in vital need of points to get further clear of the drop zone. Join me, Rob Pritchard, for FC Isle of Man versus AFC Liverpool, kicking off at 6 p.m. this Saturday. Manx Radio will be bringing you full live match commentary on our DAB and AM 1368 channels.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And the Chief Minister, Alfred Cannon, MHK, is here. There's a note in from Gaz, who's just said, Chief Minister, you said you were going to reorganise the DOI when you were Minister, and you would sort out the OHR post the Ranson case. What's the progress on both of those?
Well, so, you know, we did make considerable progress. I mean, one of the things that happened as a direct result of the Dr. Ranson case was that we created an operational performance and change board. And that board consists of two non-executive directors from the island, professional individuals who I say have made a significant difference and created a different perspective in terms of challenging the and working with the senior executive to ensure that, that we are putting in the right policies and principles, and we are reviewing and getting on top of the challenges that, that face the public sector, but particularly ensuring that we've got proper scrutiny around recruitment, retention, efficiency programs. So we have made progress in that perspective, and I think that having this sort of central board has made a difference in terms of ensuring that you know, the performance of things like OHR and our digital infrastructure are being brought to the proper attention of the senior executive and the senior politicians, and getting this additional private sector, if you like, overview. And in terms of the DOI, perhaps there hasn't been as much progress as I personally would have wanted, but we have seen an airport board created, so that oversight there is, again, you know, this idea that I am passionate about ensuring that we have some overview from outside the public sector in terms of the operations that are being undertaken is very important. And of course, we've got a major projects board as well now, which properly oversees the projects that are being undertaken through the and the project planning process that have been undertaken through the DOI and across government. And that was created in order to try and stop things like, or to ensure that things like Liverpool landing stage and other infrastructure projects, which have in the past proved troublesome, who have overspent, are given the best possible opportunity to succeed, and that the right and relevant questions are being asked at the earliest stages of those projects.
A note in from Sean, who just said, is there any possibility or probability in the future the airport will be privatised?
No.
No elements of the airport?
And you're not going to we would not privatise, certainly not on my watch, a national asset, you know, particularly when we've got one airport. If we had a multitude of airports on this island, that would be potentially a different question. But you surely are not going to give away a strategic asset like that. Whether it's run in a slightly different way is a different matter. But privatisation for a strategic asset like that, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, I was one of the senior ministers heavily involved in bringing the steam packet back to the island was because of the way that it was being treated and used by private commercial
interests.
It was. And, you know, I know that we will see the benefits of that. In fact, if we hadn't have done that and we'd had to go through COVID with a privatised steam packet, the cost to the Treasury and to the island, I'm sure would have been huge at the time.
Okay. And a note, this is Finlow. Hello, Finlow, who just said, so what is the future for the Isle of Man's national gas field?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, obviously, we've just had a fairly significant discussion in Tynwald about the a sort of net zero agenda, the wind, and obviously within that, gas. So at the moment, clearly there is a planning application that is being undertaken. It's now a live planning application, so I'll be careful what I say, but by Ørsted in that same area that the gas field exists. I think we now have to go through that process over the next 12 months. Tynwald voted not to issue any new licenses post Kroger, but I think that this really now will be a matter for the next government, and I expect, Andy, this to be rightfully a discussion. But I do need to be clear about the gas field. You know, there is interest there, absolutely. We now have a company who, again, have publicly expressed an interest in that gas field. I think rightfully that proposition, again, needs to be examined, but I think it also needs to be something that is properly discussed at the next election, and something I'm sure that the public will want to know where candidates stand. But even it's not quite as binary as that. It is quite complex, simply because, one, we've potentially got this wind lease, and potentially, depending on a planning application, may or may not have turbines there. The second question, of course, is about the connection for wind produced electricity to the UK, if that goes ahead, you know. And then thirdly, there's obviously the question about coexistence, and even getting to a point where actually there is certainty about the capability for a company to extract gas. So absolutely, you can take that high level binary view, yes, I'm for it, or no, I'm against it. But even if people are for it, and understandably so, because gas remains a transition fuel, then clearly it's not, it's what I would just say, it's just not quite as straightforward as a simply, yes, we're going to go and drill, because of some of the complexities around the overlay and the use of that particular seabed.
Okay, this is concerns Orsted, and I understand the planning application is in and what have you, but I got a note in from Brian, who just said, what about the technicalities, the legalities of, if Orsted are generating electricity in Manx waters, it's being landed in the UK, the contract for difference will have to be negotiated with the UK government. And surely that will be a first for the UK government, because they've been negotiating a subsidy to the company generating electricity in Manx waters and benefiting the Manx Exchequer.
So Brian's absolutely right. This again, I'm sure, when again we're going back over a decade now to, you know, Alan Bell's time, when this seabed was first put up for lease effectively to Dong Energy at the time. I can't remember back then how the connections and CFD rounds were working, but yes, you've got a wind farm outside UK territorial waters wanting to feed into the UK grid. That needs legislation in the UK, and it needs clear regulation and acceptable regulation from a UK standpoint. We are going to get clarity on that in the next 12 months as to how that works. I think if that is going to work in the near future, or at least we'll then set out a time scale as to how that would work moving forward into the future, political will in the UK accepting. So I think what I would say to Brian would be the same message that I just talked about in terms of the previous question about the gas. This is actually complicated. It is not that straightforward. He has asked a very astute question.
Okay. Jason, was the Isle of Man government offered the purchase of Manx Telecom before it was sold to Jersey Telecom? And what is the think about the sale and the impact of telecommunications on the Isle of Man? Do you think the Manx government, the Manx people, should own Manx Telecom?
I think there are going to be... I think it's a very, you know, small... In the great scheme of things, a telecoms company that is serving 85,000 plus people is actually quite a small telecoms business in the great scheme of things. And, you know, I think the merger, well, at least as I've been told, will give us greater opportunity for investment because of the scale,
right,
the larger scale of the business. Was the government offered a share in Manx Telecom? Not to my knowledge. There was no formal offers made to the government about buying Manx Telecom.
Because taxpayers' money has been put into the fibre rollout. You know, over £10 million put into that.
It has. It has, because I think there was a clear acknowledgement that that type of level of investment into sort of infrastructure, if you like, was absolutely needed if we were going to meet our ambitions to deliver the best possible standards of internet connection that we we could across the island. And yes, we have put that in. I think that has been, on the whole, a successful rollout. There has been some hiccups. There's still ongoing questions around polls. I know that. But, you know, on the whole, that has been successful. And we do generally have faster broadband speeds. And, of course, the copper anyway was going to become redundant, Andy. It had to be done, and the government had to take a role, and the taxpayer had to take a role in ensuring we had fully switched over to fibre, which is really the only sustainable way forward given the advances in technology.
Okay, Noel, this is a message from Facebook. He takes what you say about being true: inward investment, positive growth, record deposits, genuine businesses looking to relocate. So, and again, this is, you're talking about how Manx people view it. We've had 40 odd years of growth. Lots of people, and this is Noel says, but we look at the infrastructure, rundown town centres, large number of derelict buildings, ongoing healthcare issues, departmental overspends, and connectivity problems. So, what's your message to people who see things, the Isle of Man, not as it used to be, not as pristine as it used to be, and yet business is doing okay? What's your message to them?
I would say there's a lot of work to be done, Andy. And I mean, I think when I started that off, I think I just wanted to put a perspective, but absolutely acknowledge there has still been some contraction in our economy in terms of GDP figures. I think we can acknowledge that there's been some contraction, some ups and downs, for example, in iGaming or e-gaming. And there's a lot to do. We've actually, you know, we've invested in trying to get some of these brownfield sites up and running. We will see the progress on that. We've obviously got, as I look out of this window, the Villiers site now coming up out of the ground. I'm hoping that will make a difference. And, you know, absolutely. I mean, I accept that there's a lot of aging infrastructure, a lot of aging buildings on the island. That's the downside. On the upside, you know, I think, you know, the island's got plenty of ways forward to grow and develop as an island. And there is the challenge about regenerating our town centres, regenerating some of our buildings, encouraging investment in that space. And we've got to keep working at it. We have made the best efforts we can through things like the Island Infrastructure Scheme, where companies have been able to access funding to start developing brownfield sites. Okay. But I agree, you know, there is a long way to go.
Well, thanks for being with us today. And a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Andy, they always get very quick, these interviews. I'm sure there are plenty more questions. Can I just finish by saying Happy Christmas?
WINT